Joining us on our KTAR Newsmaker line is Thad Bingle. Thad is with Command Group founding partner and the former chief of staff for the U.S. Customs and Border Protection. Thank you very much for joining us today, Mr. Bingle.
Great to be with you, Bruce.
So, obviously, talk about your wheelhouse and the world that you live in with border protection, security, and what's been going on down there. We want to jump in and ask you right now, from your time with Customs and Border Protection and with your time now in the private sector working, can you tell us what has changed along our southern border? Has something changed recently that has led to this, what some people are calling a crisis?
Well, the biggest change to point out, first of all, is where the recent wave of immigrants, and by recent, I mean starting really 2012 was really the turning point, mm-hmm. where they were coming from. When I left at the end of the Bush administration in 2009, out of our total southwest border apprehensions, we had 716,000 of those that year were Mexican. And only 92,000 were from these Central American countries. Our entire infrastructure was built to hold people for basically 48 hours at a maximum at Border Patrol stations so they could be processed, turned right back over across the border to Mexico. And only the few that were subject to criminal prosecution or who were claiming asylum might be detained longer.
Got it.
That really started to change during the Obama administration. In 2014, we went to 283,000 Central Americans that year. So nearly, triple the amount. And unlike Mexicans, we cannot voluntarily repatriate them to Mexico. Mexico,
right.
Even if they cross, will not accept them back. That was a radical change. And we didn't get in front of it then. And we're paying the price still today because we didn't build the long-term detention capacity along with some court decisions and settlements that meant we had to turn people over, especially minors, within a certain amount of time. That's what's making this so different than what we were seeing in Arizona 10 years ago.
We're talking with Thad Bingle. He's with Command Group founding partner and a former chief of staff for U.S. Customs and Border Protection. At that, my question, though, is the separation of children from their parents. I haven't heard it reach this fever pitch in previous administrations. It seems as though there was a change in policy by the Trump administration some 6 weeks ago. And I'm curious as to how previous administrations, you talked about the Bush administration, a little bit of the Obama administration, how did those administrations handle families crossing the border, seeking asylum? Because it's been happening for a long time.
Yeah.
This isn't the first administration.
They didn't just start showing up.
Yeah, so how did previous administrations handle this situation?
Well, again, the numbers have pretty radically changed, starting with first unaccompanied minors that were showing up in 2013, 2014 was a radical change for what we had seen before. Now, we did have family units always, some of them seeking asylum, some of them we were able to keep together because, again, we were turning them right back over as Mexican nationals to Mexico within 48 hours. So there was never a separation issue. We also didn't have, one of the things that's causing the current crisis, as being described, is that you're trying to criminally prosecute people who are not showing up at the port of entry to claim asylum, but are crossing illegally between the ports of entry. And now, because of these court decisions and settlement agreements that have happened in the interim since 2009, in many cases, you now have to, for parents you're going to criminally prosecute, you can't keep their children together. The rules say you can only keep the children for 72 hours, and then DHS has to turn them over to another cabinet department, HHS. And it says we can only maintain a family together in holding for 20 days maximum, and our family holding capacity is maxed out. So, these date strictures, some of them were not in place before, and we've never encountered family units at this level from other than Mexico. And that's what's really, it's really a complete breakdown of the system that if we had built family detention capacity years ago, mm-hmm. we might have been able to handle this, but even with that detention capacity, our limits on how long we can hold people as a family when you're trying to repatriate the family, you can only hold the children there for 72 hours. That really puts a restriction on what you can do and where you can keep them.
Fair to say. Thad Bingle, again, a former chief of staff for the U.S. Customs and Border Protection, helping add some context to it. And you mentioned the people who have crossed illegally, even if they are looking or attempting to apply for or present themselves, I don't know the proper terminology, for asylum. We're hearing stories of, and there are reports of, even at legal ports of entry, that people who are attempting to present themselves for asylum, they're even having difficulty doing that. Is that still the system is just overwhelmed?
Well, I think the system is still a bit overwhelmed, but that's still a far better alternative than trying to do this between the ports of entry. You know, the process that you should follow if you were seeking to asylum is to turn yourself over at a port of entry. You may be told to come back the next day and apply because they're overwhelmed, but that's the system they're trying to push mm-hmm. everyone towards so that you don't encounter this detention problem and you don't have to be separating families from children. I know that's not what anyone wants to do. But the big goal here, too, again, that we have to keep in mind is ultimately all of this is about trying to not only enforce our border security at the border with anyone who would cross illegally, but we're trying to send a clear message to discourage people from ever starting this journey from Central America in the beginning. As tragic as it may be to keep families and children apart temporarily in what are, you know, basic but safe facilities, you know, how many lives are lost on that journey through Mexico? You know, if this saves
it's
one
dangerous.
Child from drowning in the Rio Grande, if it saves one five-year-old from dying in the desert, you know, in Sonora, if it saves one teenager from being raped from Central America on her way through Mexico, you know, what's the alternative? You know, that's the behavior we're trying to discourage, is parents putting themselves and their children at risk with dangerous drug cartels and human trafficking organizations through Mexico.
But Thad, we also have a lot of parents who are leaving really violent, dangerous situations in Central America to save the lives of their family and their children, and they're willing to risk their lives and their children's lives on that very dangerous journey.
They think all those things are
Mexico.
Still better.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, we're in a very precarious situation here. I get the whole idea of if you want asylum, do it the right way. Cross through a port of entry, you may be turned around and said, you got to come back tomorrow because we don't have the resources to handle it today. We're seeing stories of lines and lines and lines of people who they've been in line for 2 days and one person has been interviewed for asylum. So as the government is promising to prosecute anyone who seeks asylum the wrong way by crossing into the U.S. illegally, it's also raising some serious questions about just how possible is it to seek asylum the right way?
Well, that's a very valid point, and they need to figure that out. They need to do more. If you're going to say this is the right way to do it, then that has to be a way that's accessible, and you have to have some confidence that you're going to see an immigration official, you're going to be able to file a claim, you're going to have some certainty about the way it's going to move through a legal determination process in front of a judge. You know, all those things need to happen, and it could start actually in Central America. You pointed out the conditions, and I've been there. You know, It's levels of abject poverty and crime that, you know, that we would shudder at here in some of these countries. So that's a very real problem. And where I maybe differ from some of the current policymakers is, you know, we undertook pretty significant foreign aid initiatives with Colombia and with Mexico, there were teetering on the verge of being failed states in a lot of the same ways. And Merida and Plan Colombia, you know, really made a difference by propping up some of the civil institutions in those countries and providing aid that caused people to stay home instead of flood out of their country as refugees. And, you know, more of that needs to be done. The impact of a dollar spent there is far greater than the dollar we're spending to detain people here in the U.S.
Yeah, that's a wonderful point. Again, Thad Bingle, former chief of staff of U.S. Customs and Border Protection, it's one that it may not be a popular discussion to have, but what I hear you say, and I've seen some of the numbers before, it's kind of a pay me now, pay me later kind of argument. You either encourage them not to leave El Salvador, as an example, by investing in and making El Salvador a place that they feel least safe to live in, or you can deal with them on the border, but you're going to deal with it one way or the other.
Absolutely, Bruce. That's the reality, you know. And we can either ignore reality and say, well, they'll just stop coming if all we do is make it tougher.
Yeah.
They're not, you know. Yeah. They won't stop coming, and we can do more with Mexico too, to work with them to discourage people, you know, using their country as a transit zone to get themselves here, including, you know, they need to look at what they do for, mm-hmm. for handling asylum requests from neighboring countries as well. You know, they're pretty tough. Maybe they could accept some people who are legitimately experiencing, you know, threats to their life and safety.